the lessons learned of the last decades was that aid needs to be demand-oriented, really needs to address the real needs of the affected population, and also needs to be coordinated in such a way that it's not duplicated, that aid is not wasted, that it's relevant for the people. That's the dilemma we are as humanitarians. We always want to see as human beings that this stops immediately. But on the other hand, we need to be pragmatic enough and plan ahead.
Inside Impact.
Der Podcast mit Wirkung.
Hello and welcome back to Inside Impact, and welcome to our second episode focusing on the situation of civil society in Ukraine. Today we have a closer look on the role of international aid organizations and their role in supporting local social ecosystems. I had the honor to talk to Andreas Knapp. He is chair of Austrian Foundation Nachbar in Not. Nachbar in Not, which translates to neighbor in need, is a collaboration between the Austrian public broadcasting station ORF and the largest social service providers within the country. The foundation aims to provide quick and impactful disaster relief and has been up and running for 30 years. The interview has been recorded on January 25th. Andreas, thank you very much for joining us for this talk today. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing quite well. Although I must say it has been yet another busy day in organizing the support, mainly at the moment for Ukraine, the humanitarian support. It is challenging, but at the same time also rewarding, because it's clear that the support we are able to provide from Austria to our partners in Ukraine is making a difference for so many people in these very challenging times.
That is very nice to hear. And yes, I can only suppose that it's very stressful, very, very hard times also, but then it's good to hear that it's also rewarding to be able to help in this regard. As I said, you're on the one hand head of international aid at Caritas Austria. In our today's talk, I would like to focus a little bit more on Nachbar in Not. For our Austrian audience, I think a very well-known program, actually. But could you please introduce it very quickly? What is its history? What is the approach of Nachbar in Not?
Nachbar in Not, or Neighbor in Need in English, is a very unique Austrian initiative, international initiative to provide humanitarian support for countries and people in crisis. It has been founded in 1992. So last year in 2022, we were celebrating actually 30 years anniversary of Neighbor in Need. And it was founded 30 years ago. And the sad cause or factor for creating was the war in Yugoslavia. And by that time, Kurt Bergmann, the Secretary General of ORF, came up with the idea to create an aid campaign for foreign aid, similar to Licht ins Dunkel, the support initiative for people in need in Austria. So the idea was to expand this to foreign countries, and in the case of Yugoslavia, considered as neighbor and therefore neighbor in need. And by that time, ORF, together with Caritas and Rotes Kreuz, founded this initiative. And it was really already this initial campaign for Yugoslavia turned out to be a very successful one. I myself recall it, and I was by that time studying, and I remember still the very graphical image of, which was shown in Austrian TV, the number of lorries with aid products delivered to Yugoslavia, and there was always this very graphic number, and I think it was by that time a simple and straightforward marketing idea also to encourage Austrian population to support this, because it was very tangible and visible what could be achieved with this kind of support.
And what is also done with the support and provided with people who really wanted also to support this. So make it really visible. This is where your help is going.
Exactly. And based on this very strong first campaign, and unfortunately the war was sort of carrying on for quite some years, and the campaign continued, and then it was quickly realized for this support to be provided on a longer term, it needed also a stronger institutional structures, and it needed also rules and regulations, and therefore it was decided, and I think it was a very wise decision, to create a foundation. So that's why we are talking now of the Neighbor in Need Foundation, where Caritas and Red Cross are the founding members of this foundation, and additional partners joined the initiative, like CARE, Arbeiter-Samariter-Bund, Diakonie, Volkshilfe, Malteser, were joining this initiative to make it a broader initiative, and they became cooperation partner. And I think the foundation proved itself to be a good sort of institutional home for this Austrian initiative, providing the necessary legal framework and also allowing an organized decision making and representation of the cooperation partners in this foundation.
So very much bringing together actually, yeah, maybe the biggest players or some of the biggest players at least when it comes to social services and aid in Austria. But what is maybe very interesting to people who are not that familiar with Neighbor in Need or Nachbar in Not, that it was an initiative by the Austrian television.
And I would still say this is really a unique feature of Austria, and also the fact that we still have ORF as the national broadcasting agency, because ORF sees this sort of role still as part of the official mandate, the öffentliche Rundfunksauftrag. And in ORF, this falls under humanitarian broadcasting, like brands and initiatives like Licht ins Dunkel, Neighbor in Need, Nachbar in Not, and Mutter Erde. These are all sort of humanitarian brands still linked to the public mandate of ORF, den öffentlichen Rundfunksauftrag. And we as aid agency, we can only sort of really highly appreciate this role ORF is playing, because I think we have a very good distribution of roles. ORF is really our media partner and helping us a lot in the fundraising and in making the needs public and really creating this sense of urgency and also the need to support such an initiative to make the crisis situation and the need of the affected population visible to the Austrian population, and therefore also creating a sense of trust for this kind of activities. And we as organizations organized under this foundation, we have the framework to really specialize on what we are good at, meaning providing aid and deciding where the money should go in terms of the needs of the people. So I think it's a very good proven initiative where everybody plays to its comparative advantage.
Now, you mentioned a very important part, of course, of all of international aid programs, kind of, because you, on the one hand, said Nachbar in Not, Neighbor in Need was founded 30 years ago now, or 31, with the terrible war in Yugoslavia. And on the other hand, you said that you can really focus on your core competency, deciding where the money, where the help should go. So how does Neighbor in Need usually organize international aid programs? What is the approach of deciding, okay, we need to help there, we need to help there? Because of course now between the war in Ukraine and the war in Yugoslavia, there have been of course 30 years of terrible situations again, but maybe not caused by wars and disputes.
Yeah, and obviously a lot of unfortunate crisis situations have happened, different wars in different parts of the world, which needed also the humanitarian support. But through this also there was a lot of learnings, and sort of humanitarian aid industry 30 years ago and now is different. And I think we have also all learned our lessons in these years. And for us in Neighbor in Need, the key is, and that's also one criteria for the partners to be members of the initiative, is that we really rely strongly, the backbone for our support are our international networks. If I take Caritas, for example, Caritas is represented in more than 160 countries of the world. And therefore, we always have a partner to go to, and we can use this from the first second when we have to provide support. We can rely on local structures and partners who are then again linked up in their own respective country to coordination structures. Because the lessons learned of the last decades was that aid needs to be demand-oriented, really needs to address the real needs of the affected population, and also needs to be coordinated in such a way that it's not duplicated, that aid is not wasted, that it's relevant for the people and not the perception of people sitting in Austria. So here we have learned our lessons that really the key is rapid needs assessment coming from our partners. And I must say trusted partners in the sense we always make sure that we support in countries where we have trusted networks, where we already know the partner before the crisis occurred. For example, again, taking Ukraine as an example, Caritas Austria and Caritas Vienna has worked in Ukraine with Caritas Ukraine and Caritas Space. There are two Caritas organizations in Ukraine for the last 20 years already. So in that sense, we had strong partnerships we could rely on and could immediately provide aid from the first day onwards, because we had ongoing relationships, we have contractual relationships, we have a common way of working. The Caritas Ukraine knows what we need in terms of accountability, and vice versa. And I think that's key. And the Red Cross would rely on the same structures through their Red Cross network. CARE, for example, CARE International has a network of CARE organizations. And for me, that is key, that you have a strong local partner who is recognized by the government in this respective affected country, and who is then also linked to a broader coordination structure. And in many larger crises, which have reached an extent that the national governments alone cannot handle it anymore, usually the UN comes and helps setting up. The International Red Cross and the UN, there is again a globally agreed coordination structure where it's clear who takes the lead on which subsector, for example, health assistance, education assistance, food assistance, shelter. And here our local partners are then linking up to these structures. So I think this is the main backbone to effective humanitarian support.
So really putting the partnerships in focus and also having partnerships in mind even when there is no necessary exactly. needs at the moment.
And where we, for example, see our role even as Caritas Austria to advocate strongly that even in times of peace or non-emergency situation, you would build up capacities of our local civil society partners to really be prepared, specifically in countries where you have a likelihood of earthquakes, flooding, whatever. War situations usually is a different situation, but in terms of emergency preparedness, there are countries which are more prone to certain crises and disasters than others. And here, obviously, the general wisdom is to at least make sure that there is a minimum preparedness so that once a crisis kicks in, you can reduce the sort of negative effects of a crisis.
And also the time spent to react.
Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned a lot, of course, the international organizations also coming to help, coming to aid. in these circumstances. Actually, I talked to rather a critic of such international organizations in a country bordering Ukraine a while ago, and they mentioned that the coming in of such international aid organizations also could lead to disrupting existing local help ecosystems, because smaller organizations, for instance, are not able then to afford stuff anymore because UN organizations or similar are kind of stealing them away with higher wages and stuff like this. Of course, Neighbor in Need is also kind of an international aid organization. How does Neighbor in Need, and maybe also Caritas, of course, with their networks, ensure that their work is not only beneficial to people in crisis situations, but also does not harm such local help ecosystems in the long term?
I would say I would come back to what I said before. Compared to other sort of international, we call it INGOs, international NGOs, I think Neighbor in Need has a very local footprint, because we are hardly visible as Caritas Austria in Ukraine, because it's actually Caritas Ukraine helping. The same with the Red Cross. Red Cross Austria has a very low footprint. It is actually mainly the National Red Cross Federation is providing aid. So therefore, we focus on our support here in Austria, which is mobilizing the funding, really helping the partners to come up with the proposals, because we have it as a requirement in Neighbor in Need that there are clear project proposals defined to fulfill minimum quality criteria, exactly where the proposal says what is the need, what is the indicator, what's the budget line, so that these projects can also then be audited, because it's also very important we feel ourselves very accountable to the people for these donations. And I think one of the successes of Neighbor in Need was also that there has been no sort of any misuse of funding on a certain scale in these 30 years, because we have multiple financial checks. We have an audit of a project and we have an audit at the foundation level. But coming back to your original question of destruction, through working with the local partners, we try to have hardly any footprint as such. But it is a reality which we actually even observe ourselves, that with a crisis of such a scale, there is a shortage of skilled people being able to respond. And sort of, and usually in a country of a crisis where even many people are fleeing, moving out, it's getting even worse. So it is a reality that there is competition of the few skilled people. But here again, I think I can say it mainly for Caritas, we have the advantage of being a very strongly rooted local organization, where the backbone, again, of the support are even volunteers. Because to use the Austrian sort of analogy, one would say there is a Caritas at national level in Ukraine, then we have also regional Caritas organizations, and then actually in every parish even, there is a parish Caritas, and at the parish level, there are mainly volunteers. And the challenge is that every sort of support in this regional setup is helping the other level to deliver the aid effectively. So training the volunteers, and then the regional Caritas organizations are coached by the national Caritas. And through this, Caritas tries to be a bit more robust in losing its good people. But it is a reality that some people leave to UN organizations or others. I wouldn't be able to deny this. We hear this and it's a challenge. But again, by having funds ourselves to retrain people, for example, a certain percentage of the funds is also going to make sure that the local partners can sustain their capacity. We are retraining. We are aware when we have to deal with a crisis of such a scale that human resources are at the core of the response, and therefore also resources need to be planned for to make sure that this fluctuation is managed well.
We talked a lot now about the situation in Ukraine without touching the situation in Ukraine. Maybe you could give us a quick overview from your perspective. What is the current humanitarian situation within the country, and what does it look like from your perspective? And maybe also putting a second question here, how has Neighbor in Need, but also Caritas, been engaging in Ukraine since the beginning of the war?
The situation is really dire. And unfortunately, it gets worse because the fact that basic infrastructure like water and electricity is targeted, leave alone all the active fighting, but just also the fact that major infrastructure is affected and is deteriorating, the number of people depending on humanitarian support is increasing day by day. And at the moment, UN OCHA is estimating 17.7 million Ukrainians depend on some sort of humanitarian support. And you can then sort of break down the statistics in all different sectors, how children are affected in their education, how people are sort of needing access to better food even and livelihood. They lost their jobs, they lost their income. Or let's say basic services like water and sanitation, where again the estimate is 16 million have inadequate access to water and sanitation. So I could unfortunately continue these sad statistics for a long time and just give you one number after the other. So the situation is still dire. And if I would reflect on the different, let me call it, phases of the support we were witnessing or were confronted with, is in the outset of the crisis, at the beginning, let's say until Easter, let's say from February to Easter time, the first was the really immediate life-saving support on the front lines to make sure that basic needs like food and water and shelter is provided. But again, then in the what we considered by that time safer areas in Western Ukraine were able and were supported to receive all the, we call it, internally displaced people, IDPs, the internal refugees within Ukraine. And this was a huge challenge because we only got the numbers of people really crossing the border, and they were already huge. And countries like Poland, Slovakia, bordering countries, including Austria, received significant number of refugees and hosted them. But a huge number is really even more were in the country sort of fleeing. And we had to make sure with our partners that the basic needs of these people are somehow covered for. And this is, again, the basics like shelter, food. And in the beginning, this was many times in-kind support because it wasn't also clear whether how the local market would still be able to provide services. And I remember in the beginning, even a big question was, will the banking system still be there? Will be Ukrainians able to withdraw money from their ATM machines? And will we be able to even transfer money to the Ukraine? Fortunately, despite all the crisis, these systems didn't collapse. So relatively soon, we could shift to a sort of support, what we call cash support, financial support, which we have learned over the years. This is yet another learning of the decades of humanitarian support, that providing financial support to families and affected people under clear conditions and agreed amounts, again in this coordination structure and with the government, they agree on the certain amounts. This financial support or cash support has proven to be a very effective means of providing people. First of all, it gives people dignity. It doesn't make them sort of recipients of a charity donation. Let's call it like this. They have the freedom to decide what to do with this money. And there's really very good evidence, research done, that people really spend the money on the priorities, which we would have also assessed as aid agencies. So there's a very strong correlation on that. And one major benefit of this cash support is it helps to keep the local economy up and running. So because in such crisis, this is also a risk that the local economy collapses and supply chains are disappearing. And through this financial support, local markets are supported. And during summertime was the means of support, but also consolidating and the shelters for internally displaced people, and also still catering for the needs of highly vulnerable people in the war-affected areas. And the sad story. These were the most touching stories, that we had cases of elderly people staying back, elderly people actually needing care. And there some families had no other ways of leaving them back. So Caritas was actually providing mobile home-based care under all the risks of you know, air bombardment. So I would say there was really, in my view, very heroic support, really. I really am not a person usually using these kind of words, but it's really was remarkable what was done by our partners during that time. And then it was relatively clear, soon clear, that the war is dragging on. There is no reduction or fighting inside. The conflict was rather escalating than reducing. We immediately realized that we need to prepare for the winter time, for we call it winterization programs, where it was clear that we need to look at shelter again in areas where there was the front line and a lot of destruction happened, but then the front line moved on and it was again really newly retaken. The principle was to make sure that at least one room per house is repaired in such a way that it could be heated and could serve as a winter fit shelter room. So the priority was on quick repairs of broken windows, roofs, and also providing to the households some support for heating materials and for stoves and for all activities to prepare themselves for the harsh winter, which is actually at the moment now a reality in the Ukraine.
Thank you so much for bringing these points up. Really shocking and really sad, but we need to be grateful that care is being provided in this regard. You talk now also a little bit about learnings and experiences you could use in the situation in Ukraine, like giving really financial means to people and keeping local ecosystems and local economies running. But maybe asking from a different perspective, how is the current situation different to other neighbor in need programs and projects which have been supported in the past? What is the main difference there?
I think an obvious difference is the scale of the crisis, the number of people we are talking about, and the fact that it is turning into a prolonged crisis. Here, in that sense, one could rather compare it with the war in Yugoslavia than with other natural disasters we were confronted with in the past in neighboring need. But Ukraine, as I said, is the scale of the crisis, is the sort of volatility of the situation, that the situation is always, the front line is changing, but also war tactics are changing. And the fact that part of the war strategy is to really destroy also this basic infrastructure brought another dimension to the humanitarian crisis. And one has to adjust all the time to this situation. And one shouldn't forget that the helpers, in our case, our really very hardworking Ukrainian colleagues from Caritas Ukraine, they are affected themselves by this war. And one shouldn't forget they are in the middle of this. And we also have to make sure that their basic safety is ensured, and you can only help if you have a basic resilience yourself. And that makes it also so different that you need to look at your teams and your human resources, that they are not getting burned out, in a sense, with a burnout syndrome of help, you know. So these are real different challenges of this current crisis, and We say it, we sometimes say in German, it needs a langen Atem, a long breath. And it's a reality. We really have to, as sad as it is, and that's the dilemma we are as humanitarians. We always want to see as human beings that this stops immediately. But on the other hand, we need to be pragmatic enough and plan ahead, because the signs currently are there that this crisis is prolonged, and we hope it doesn't get completely in a so-called protracted crisis, which then continues over years. That's still the hope we have.
Now, you talked about planning ahead, which is very interesting to me. How do you plan ahead in a situation like this? Do you have different scenarios in mind and planning for them individually? Because, of course, the situation could change day by day, basically.
Yes, we have scenarios in mind. For example, as I said, even these phases I was describing, they were part of a sort of response strategy. And we can also rely on similar situations like the crisis in Syria, which was also an armed conflict, unfortunately still is. Armed conflict, a similar scale. So there are learnings from such countries. That's one thing. And again, it's based also on the organization's experience and comparative advantage and scope of work they had before the crisis. Because Caritas Ukraine was existing before the crisis. It was a bit smaller, they had fewer employees, but they were still providing social services in certain areas. So they know the areas well, and they have developed experience in certain social services. So for example, home-based care was for Caritas, they did it even before. So what they do is, in times of emergency, they change a bit the mode of working, but they rely a lot on their experience of what they have done before. And these experiences help us to predict. And again, this is the advantage of having such strong, competent local partners. Because from a distance from Austria, this would be much more difficult, but together I think we can really combine forces and can get the best hopefully for the people in need.
Inside Impact.
Now, coordinating and strong partners are again very important topics, not only within Caritas, but also within Neighbor in Need, because now looking again at the national level a little bit more, you said it at the beginning of our talk, of course, you have some of the largest social service providers in Austria under one roof, basically, with this foundation. And I imagine it's not always easy to effectively and easily coordinate such big organizations under one roof. So what is needed in this regard to have really this variety of large organizations working together effectively and coordinating them?
That's a very good question. I think that's why I was even referring today before that it was important to develop at least a tailored institutional home for this initiative. And we found this foundation was actually a good solution, because the foundation has mainly two governing bodies. One is the council, the Neighbor in Need Council, where all organizations have a representative, and they are very much the technical people to really agree and propose projects to the board. Here we have developed a culture of peer review, sort of one organization according to its advantage and according to the needs coming from their network. They make a proposal, and then the proposal is given to another agency, and they look at it and sort of peer review it, and so this goes around. So that's another. And on top of it, for the crisis in Ukraine now, we have one additional full-time employee, a person, very experienced person. She looks at the proposals also from a very independent point of view and checks up eligibility, are all the conditions fulfilled. So these are different checks and balance. And the peer review helps so that there is a good spirit of togetherness. I always fear when I say good in the context of this crisis, but you know, given this sad situation, the good thing still is that all organizations in the initiative have such a strong commitment to support, and with the gracious support from Austrian private sort of individuals donating money, on top of it the government doubling the amounts, there are enough resources available for all the organizations to really deliver to their comparative advantage. So the first is the council, the technical level, the screening of projects where questions are asked. It's not clear where the demand comes from. It has to be improved and rewritten. But this is actually happening quite fast. And then the next level of check and scrutiny is by us at the board level. Here we have a system that the founding agencies, Caritas and Red Cross, are actually having always a fixed board member. And then the other partners, cooperation partners, out of them they elect one of board members. So we are three in the board. And from Caritas and Red Cross as the two founding agencies, the chair of the board is on a rotating basis. Currently it's Caritas, so it's myself, and it's a 3 years period, and in the coming 3 years it will be then Red Cross. So in that sense it's quite well straight, not very complicated. That's also, I think, a secret of Neighbor in Need, that it's very simple actually, not too soft. It's lean, it's a very lean structure, because we as board members, we are actually voluntary in that sense. And therefore, I think we can really, as I said before, can deliver to our strengths actually under an accepted rule system provided by the foundation. And one thing I wanted to say, it was really impressive where I really felt touched that, and where we can be really proud of, the Ukrainian example. There was the invasion on a Thursday, I think. And then on already Friday lunchtime, myself and the other two Vorstände, we had a phone call with ORF, with Bio Strobel, the head of humanitarian broadcasting. And it took us only 5 minutes to decide we have to do something about it. And already in the same evening, we had the campaign in ORF. We had the images, we had the text, we had the spots. And it is really amazing how easy it is when everybody wants, and when there is a clear structure set out, how fast one can help. And in such a crisis, being fast means helping double, you know, in terms of effect. The faster you are, the more you help. So in that sense, it was really impressive, and yet again, the Austrian population's generosity and sign of solidarity was really positively overwhelming.
So when we talk about effective international aid, I very strongly now hear, of course, being very quick, but also having, partners who know what they're doing and being unbureaucratic and very lean in, let's call it, organization structure, if we want to be technical in this regard.
And have structures already in place that you don't need to build structures when the crisis kicks, because you need to be there from the first second in that sense. And I think that's the strength of it. And the fact that it already existed 30 years before was in that sense beneficial to this very campaign for the Ukraine.
Now, not only talking about Neighbor in Need, but international aid in general, would you have any further thoughts and recommendations on changes needed to make it even more effective?
Yes, there is a strong international debate going on, and obviously the... What I mentioned before, I think we should do more in terms of emergency preparedness, specifically knowing that nobody denying the sad reality of climate change, natural disasters occurring more frequently. There's good science for that. And I think that the need for seriously and substantially investing in climate change adaptation programs, but even more so also than emergency preparedness programs, having in disaster-prone countries really increasing their national capacity to reduce the risks of disasters, but also the preparedness to respond. So that's that. There's, I think, a lot to be done. There is, I guess, also still need for more coordination. Coordination is still sometimes in some situations more just sharing information, but in many situations one needs to go one step further and really have structures of really joint decision making where really decisions are made so that they are really affecting the individual agency's response. That's still an area one could do more. And I guess also rolling out more this, what I referred before the cash support, there's still some agencies reluctant to consider cash support, with some of, in my view, not proven skepticism, or let's say assumption that we as aid agencies know better the needs of the people, rather than giving the affected population the money and they make the decision what to get for this financial support. Research is very clear saying people know the best, and when you give the money directly to the beneficiaries, they know best, and therefore you avoid a sort of wastage of support, but also support the local economy. So in this area, more can be done if this can be scaled up even further in more situations. And I would say also what's already also happening in Austria, that, for example, Austrian government has just finalized its own strategy where sort of humanitarian support gets more predictable. And I think it's a smart move in a sense that you say from what you normally provide as humanitarian support through the budget and through the public finances, you are a bit more strategic about it and say, okay, experience shows that you have to have a certain amount of money for unforeseen natural crises and disasters. But the sad reality says, and unfortunately this the number of countries in such a situation is increasing, in countries with a protracted crisis, you keep certain funding aside so that it becomes for agencies like Caritas, Red Cross and others more predictable. And you can also plan, as we first talked about, more in advance. And this would also help to make aid more effective and not less ad hoc, specifically in countries which are under a protracted crisis. Many times it's an armed conflict of any kind which causes then a protracted crisis. And here to have certain resources more predictable helps in improving the quality and the effectiveness of the humanitarian aid.
So really also having these strategic considerations when they are not yet needed, and maybe they will not be needed for a long time, but it's better to be prepared and have these considerations when they are not necessary yet. You talked also about Austria, of course. Very quickly, as individuals, as Austrians, how can we best support Ukrainian people from your perspective at the moment?
Yeah, here I can refer also to my chances I had to visit Ukraine and even interact with beneficiaries, with our partners, but also with more senior political leaders in the Ukraine. And what was very clear at all levels is the need stand with us. Sort of, we need all to be giving a strong sign of solidarity. And you can give these signs in different ways. But very clear was, I was there in summertime when the energy crisis, the peak of the high energy prices was an issue here, and really Ukrainians feared a lot that European nations possibly would lose the interest in supporting them, and they were, the first thing is was always saying, leave alone all the aid you are giving us, whatever, please stand with us. So we need the solidarity. If Europe is no longer united, that was the first obvious thing that they mentioned. And in very practically for us, again, also referring, as I said, the cash support and the other means of providing effective humanitarian support. After all, financial support is possibly the easiest and most effective one to allow us to do the work we think we have learned over the years, and where we would use our partner networks to provide tailored and targeted support. So it's financial support, but also keep welcoming Ukrainians arriving in Austria. And there is also need for national activities, be it financial support, but there is also in-kind support possible. You know, the fact that so many private Austrians are opening up their apartments and homes is a huge support, actually. And there are also ways of support through, again, through our Caritas structure. We have even a virtual community called Füreinand. You can register, and then you get always updates on what's actually needed in terms of in-kind support for Ukrainian refugees in Austria. But even sometimes if we know there is a targeted need for certain support which is not available in Ukraine, even there we would call through Füreinand for this kind of support. So there are really many ways, but the first and foremost is really the standing with the Ukrainians in whatever way we can do.
I think these are very strong words to end this interview, Kainer. Thank you very much, Andreas Knapp, for providing us these insights into how Neighboring Need and Caritas International work, but also on the situation in Ukraine from your perspective. As you might know, not depending on the interview topic we have, we always ask our interview guests for a book recommendation for our listeners. Do you have such a recommendation also for people who are listening to this episode right now?
Actually, I do.
That is very nice.
And I got it as a Christmas present of my daughter, this book. And you may be a bit surprised when you hear it now. But the book is from Trevor Noah. I'm not sure whether you know him. He's a famous comedian, South African comedian in the US. I think he was just moderating the Daily Show in American TV. And this book is called Trevor Noah, Born Grime. And first of all, I think possibly my daughter gave it to me also for sort of cheering him up in a way, because he's a comedian. But the book is about his own history as a half caste. You know, he has a Swiss father and a South African black mother. So he is a half caste. And this situation, when he was born, he was actually a crime because, you know, this was still part of apartheid system. So the whole book has a very serious and a sort of human own lifetime experience, and but in the end also a success story, because I think all this experience helped him also to become this person he is, with all the success as a comedian. So I think it's a good thing in when one hand to see you can also turn a challenge into something positive. And yeah, the combination of humor and also seriousness and real life situation one has to face, I think is at this very moment, compared to my work reality, a good book and an advisable one.
That is very nice. Of course, we will put a link to this book in the show notes to this episode. And from my side, there's not much left to say, as once again, thank you very much, Andreas Knapp, for taking your time and talking to us.
Great, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Andreas Knapp, for providing your insights. If you want to know more about the foundation, you can find a link to the website in the show notes of this episode. And if you would like to get in touch with us, please feel free to write an email to insideimpact@wu.ac.at or follow us on Instagram, insideimpact with an underscore. This is it for this episode. Best wishes from WU. We're looking forward to welcome you to our next Inside Impact episodes.